Welcome to Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
All I have are negative thoughts, but you don't listen.
So it is March 21st. It is Monday, March 21st. It is a little bit over 24 hours since the absolute debacle and embarrassing loss that we had against Barcelona. And you all knew I was going to talk about it because definitely why would I not talk about it? It's essentially the thing that everyone's talking about. And we are unfortunately on the receiving end, once again, of a humiliation at the hands of Barcelona. And not only was it a Barcelona, but it was a humiliation at the hands of a Barcelona that should have been put away. We should have taken the moment to bury him. You know, essentially, and I don't understand why I do understand. There's a lot of opinions about why we suffered this defeat. And it was completely, in my mind, in a lot of ways, and in many people's mind, it was inevitable. We could have avoided it. I'm sorry. It wasn't inevitable. We could have avoided it. It was completely something that could have been avoided. Especially right now. You know, give these guys a couple of years and it's certainly shaping up that Xavi, which pisses me off even more because that is the one guy I dislike with a passion, is Xavi, you know, and to see him succeeding right now in building this team and restructuring it or allowing us to be beaten by this team, especially when they are, for me, they're not even that good yet. But we're allowing them to, we allowed them to humiliate us. And it was really because there is a lot of arrogance around this club that bothers me. And a lot of arrogance around Madridistas that is seriously bothers me as a Madridista. Because I see it in the media and I see it in the media. And then it's like you're winning games and you're doing okay. And you had this remontada over PSG. And all of a sudden, it seems like it doesn't matter to you. La Liga doesn't matter to you because you're 15 points ahead. But you're still going to let, you know, you're still going to let your biggest rivals just shit all over you because you decide that you don't want to go out there and play the game seriously. You know, you could have at least gone out and tried. You know, you can at least, you can say everything you want. People could say all they want, but they could have at least gone out there and tried. And if they had lost 1-0, and they tried and it was without Benzema and it was without some of our players, then it would have made a little bit more sense. But this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it also has to do with the tactics and the fielding of this absolutely horrible lineup, in my opinion. It may not have been not as bad as other people's. In other people's opinion, it wasn't too bad. But I think it was an absolute disaster. And I was angry. I was really angry. More so maybe because, you know, I was having a wonderful day with my kids. I had, and my family, had a nice breakfast with some family members that were visiting. And I couldn't really, you know, do some of the preliminary work. And we couldn't do a lot of the preliminary work that we usually do before a podcast, like some of the artwork and things like that, because I wasn't available. And essentially, I was out. So I wasn't doing any of the lineups and things like that, and posting them on Twitter and other stuff. And then I told my designer not to even worry about it because I wasn't going to be available for it. And then I wasn't going to come home until minutes before the game to watch it. And I didn't even catch the game until I was watching it on my phone until getting it to my house to actually catch the rest of the game after maybe the 10th minute or so live on the TV. And I made my family rush to see this fucking bullshit, you know? And I know people are going to be mad because, yeah, you know, we're still 12 points ahead and 9 points ahead of Sevilla and all this stuff. And it's just, that's not what it is to me. And you have to be honest, you can't win every single game, but the one game you don't want to lose and where you want to try your hardest is always going to be Barcelona. So it always takes time for me to collect my thoughts and not be angry and try to do a podcast where, you know, after we lose and be like, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath, not, you know, get beside myself and call for everybody's head or whatever. Kind of like other Madridistas do that are reactionary and decide, you know, hey, we're going to talk about this and we're going to take a look at it and maybe look at the bright side of things and maybe that'll be good. But that'll be the way to do it. And my anger hasn't subsided. I was pissed off at work all day. I had a pit in my stomach the entire day. And it's because I really, really, really dislike Barcelona. And as a Madridista, I think that's normal, right? Our biggest rival, and I really, really, really dislike them. And I'm a competitive person, and I'll talk about that more, but I'll get into it. But anyways, thank you for joining me. I am, of course, Eric Rivera, the host of this podcast. Welcome to another version of Y Nada Más podcast. And let's get right into it. Okay, so you can follow me on Twitter at Y Nada Más Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook at Y Nada Más Podcast. And you can find us on Instagram at YNM Podcast. And then also on our website, which is ynadamaspodcast.net, which is where you'll find articles from my good friends Hilaluddin and Trambach and everyone else that hopefully soon we'll have more people writing for us as well. So I was going to write an article myself because I love to write. And I was going to do something, you know, and say, you know, and put it up and then have it in addition to the podcast. But what I'm doing right now is I'm really going to use it, what I wrote, as an outline, because I really just sat down and started writing. And it's been a long time since I've kind of vented via writing. I usually used to do it for other things. I usually used to write about fighting and whatnot and talk about fighters and all this kind of stuff when I was doing a fighting podcast and in my fighting career and all that kind of stuff and when I had a fighting blog and all that stuff. But now it's all about football. And I think now I'm a lot more into it. I get a lot more angry because I have this podcast now and it's a way of me connecting with all the fans of this team. And some of you like to listen to the podcast, so I enjoy talking to you about it. And I think, well, you guys are disappointed, so I'm disappointed. And I'm disappointed at the team for disappointing you, you know? And I'm disappointed in the team for disappointing me. So this is going to be a little bit taken from the things that I wrote, kind of the article that I wrote. And if you want, I can post it. But anyway, I probably will post it as one of my rants after El Clásico. But here it is. It says, you know, what I'm trying to do, and I want to put it in so a way it doesn't sound so red, you know. But basically it's, you know, when Real Madrid loses, it usually takes time for me, you know, and the anger and the disappointment to subside before I can gather my thoughts and write or speak about why I feel the team lost. I write tweets after and during the game based on emotion and not always based on analysis. And honestly, that's the thing about social media. It allows us to write what we want, say what we want immediately in the moment, unfiltered, and mostly without any actual thought behind it. And a lot of times this can be dangerous. It can be stupid, but it's oftentimes very revealing about the person that's writing it. Sometimes it's too real. And too many people say what they want on social media without ever stopping to ask themselves whether they should or not, you know. And Madridistas, myself included, are a passionate bunch. And then some Madridistas, and I have said this a lot of times before, are way, way, way too reactionary. No team, no matter how great, will ever not suffer defeat. Defeat is a reality in sports. And I think sometimes Madridistas fail to understand that. They get heated, and then with the, you know, with a smartphone or a keyboard at their fingertips, you guys begin to spew vitriol to anyone and everyone, and it goes along the lines of Florentino Perez out, Ancelotti out, Real Madrid is finished. It's all insert whatever player's name's fault. We suck. They suck. Real Madrid is in the mud, or whatever idiotic overused Twitter buzzword, you know, people spit out these days to, you know, just to get people to like, retweet, or comment on your tweet. Whatever stupid meme you want to put up, whatever it is, you know. And while I think football Twitter is honestly full of sad and lonely idiots, I think yesterday's loss to Barcelona was definitely a reason to, for once, say that I somewhat agree with them. Maybe not everything they write, but that the loss against Barcelona hurt. And the worst thing about it is that it was avoidable. Listen, I hate to lose both in my personal life and when I fought in the ring, when I coached my fighters, and then even when I watch competitive sports like Real Madrid. Listen, there's no team in the world that provides me with more happiness and disappointment than Real Madrid. I'm a Real Madrid fan through and through. And because of this, I'm still trying to come to terms with El Clásico, with this loss. Because people will try and say, and we've heard it a lot in the last few days, some Madridistas coming out, it's not that serious. We're still in the lead in La Liga, or whatever else you want to say to soften the blow. But let's be real. You never, ever want to lose to Barcelona. Nobody wants to lose to Barcelona. We never want to lose. As Madridistas, we never want to lose to Barcelona. And if you're okay with it, I seriously, seriously doubt your allegiance to this historic club, or that you're honestly, that you're being honest with yourself. Listen, I don't want to sound extreme or like some crazed ultra, but I hate Barcelona with a passion. Their failure brings me happiness. Watching them lose is the literal definition of the German word Schadenfreude, or Schadenfreude, you know, which is the pleasure. Schadenfreude is actually a word that means the pleasure that is derived by another person, or in this case, team's misfortune. And as a Madridista, I share that sentiment, I think, with all of you, that the one thing we want to see is Barcelona lose. And so to go into the game the way Real Madrid did, with no plan, no structure, no attitude, was absolutely unacceptable. For Nacho to say that perhaps they played too relaxed because of the lead they have in the title race is, at least for me, the definition of non-professional and honestly a non-Real Madrid mentality. You don't just give away points, and you especially don't give away points to Barcelona. You don't relax in any game, and especially not against Barcelona. I mean, I understand switching out players and trying to preserve some because you have a big game coming up. But I think the one thing that I always felt that the one time we would always try to play our best is against our biggest rivals. And honestly, to me, the only good Barcelona is an absolutely finished Barcelona. Only if Barcelona as an institution are languishing in Segunda División, struggling to not be relegated to Segunda B, are they not a threat in my eyes. Even if they were in Segunda and their entire team was one-legged and one-eyed, I would still want Real Madrid to absolutely smash them. But you know why I feel this way? Because Barcelona feels this way about Real Madrid. They enjoy seeing a squirm. They revel in their sextetes and tripletes. They constantly remind us about the 5-0s, 4-0s, and 6-2s that we have suffered at their hands. And so I don't understand why we don't in turn ever give them something to remember as well. Yes, we have more Champions League trophies, more La Ligas, more El Clásico wins, but we still have to go out and beat them every single time. And even if we don't beat them, at least look like a goddamn team when you lose instead of being humiliated by them. Because I'm tired of the 5-0s and the 4-0s and the 6-2s. Yeah, a lot of people say they come out to play against us like it's the final. And we're more worried about winning the title. But that's exactly why they humiliate us. Because they hate us with that much of a passion. So why don't we do the same thing? Why do we always let them shit all over the team? And yeah, we've won the last 5 Clásicos, but we can't ever beat them by a wide margin when we definitely could. And honestly, look, I know a lot of people are into this stuff nowadays, you know, with the stats and the analytics and all this stuff. But I honestly, man, I watch that stuff and it's great for determining how a game played out. But I don't care about stats. I don't care about expected goals, expected assists, total shots, total passes, etc. I understand it's something that a lot of people like to do. But those numbers are good only for analyzing a game after it happens and understanding how the game was won or lost. Like, we're trying to figure out why, what happened or whatever. But the problem is that in the end, what matters is who won and who lost the game. No one is going to remember years from now the expected goals, the total shots, or the assists from a game that was played, I don't know, 20-something years ago. What they remember is who won and who lost, and that is your legacy. So when the score sheet says 5-0, 4-0, 6-2, all these long strings of stupid humiliations at the hands of Barcelona, which before were excusable because you had Messi and you had a super Barcelona team, I guess we were somewhat excusable, but to lose now against this Barcelona is absolutely ridiculous. And it was because, once again, it could have been avoided. For me, it's simple. You no matter who, you know, you either won the game or you didn't. There are no moral victories. You don't lose and then console yourself by saying, well, at least I had more possession than the other team. And leave that to people like Xavi and the sycophants at Barcelona that talk about ADN and talk about, you know, their style and the, you know, this long run of the substance and style of their football. Fuck that, man. You know, you do what you take. You do whatever it takes to win. And that's one of the things that Real Madrid has always done, is it does what it takes to win. They want to play defensively, they play defensively. They play attack, they play attack. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, they want to win. Console yourself and say, oh, it's okay that we lost because at least we looked kind of good. Leave that to Xavi and leave that to Barcelona sycophants who want to talk about fucking style. You know, and want to talk about, I understand football is supposed to be entertaining, but at the end of the day, it's also a business. It's cut or dry. And, you know, it's cut and dry. It's black and white. You either win the game or you lose the game. And the thing is, I can't compare this mentality to when I was a fighter. You either win the fight or you lose the fight. Sometimes it'll look pretty, and sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll be a tough, tough loss. It'll be a tough, tough fight and you lose. And yeah, people will respect you for it, but at the end of the day, you still lost. And what goes on your record is a loss. You know, and the point is, you don't get complacent with losing. Is you get up the net, you have to get up and fight again and go out and beat the shit out of the next guy. You know, and that's what we have to do now, is we have to get up and beat the shit out of the next guy. But the problem is, you always want to go back and rematch that guy that beat you. And you don't want to continue getting humiliated by them. You want to make sure that you stick them in the mud when you have the chance. And we have the chance. We had the chance. We've had chances to do that. And we don't do it. But listen, Barcelona, you know, to be honest with you, with that said, Barcelona deserved their victory, and I'm not going to sit here and take away from how well they played. And as much as I dislike them and want them to lose everything, they defeated us by simply playing better football and putting the ball into the net. And honestly, we're lucky they didn't score more than they did, because if it weren't for a last-ditch tackle by Casemiro, you know, the absolute class of Thibaut Courtois, and their own strikers like Ferran and Aubameyang missing chances, the score could have easily been 7-0 or 8-0. And Ancelotti, for as much as I like him and have defended him in the past, got it all wrong. Again. This is absolutely not the first time his lineups have been questionable. I don't know in what dark recesses of Carlo Ancelotti's mind the thought of playing Modric as a false nine seemed like a good idea. We're rotating players' positions where it seemed as if everyone on the team was a center forward or a center back at some point seemed like it would reap rewards. Real Madrid looked to me, and to Barcelona, I'm sure, as a team that only had one attacking outlet, and his name was Vinicius. And anytime he was able to break away from Araujo, who had himself a really good game defensively, there was nobody to pass to. There were so many points in this game where Vinicius, you know, watching the highlights again, where Vinicius is out there on the left flank and all there is in the box is Barcelona shirts. And then, like, what seemed like a lifetime later is when you see the likes of Modric and you see the likes of Rodrigo and Valverde getting to the box. You know, he was almost desperately searching for a Benzema who wasn't there, who's up in the stands. But the absence of Benzema was really no excuse, for me at least, for Ancelotti not to play a striker. I fail to understand why the likes of Jovic on the bench as a striker, or Hazard if he wants to go the false nine route, you know, I don't understand how having them on the bench and then Ancelotti decides it's better to approach the game with zero attacking threat on the pitch. Because I think when you have a reference there in the middle, you're at least keeping Barcelona's center backs like Piqué and Eddie Garcia with something to worry about. Two guys that we've seen have not been in their best form. Defensively, Barcelona is not a team that has been in their best form. And you don't even put somebody there to at least give them something to think about. So instead, what happens is we had the likes of Modric and Kroos pressing at times, which gave them wide open spaces to pick long-ass passes to the likes of Aubameyang, Fernand Torres, Dembélé, De Jong, who were making the runs into spaces behind our center backs and our fullbacks, and it led to like multiple 1v1 situations with Courtois that thankfully the guy was able to save. Because if not for him, Real Madrid would have been on the receiving end of a scoreline that would look more like American football than it did European football. And I also don't understand why, if we had no Mendy, he didn't try Miguel at left back. But you know why I know? It's because why he didn't try him? It's because he's never given the kid a chance. So he wasn't going to do it now. And we've seen what Miguel has been able to do some of the times that he's played. And then we've seen the things that he's done with Castilla. But I understand not playing him in a game against Barcelona because you never even given the guy a chance in other games where you could have clearly given him the chance. And honestly, before I was protecting him when the results were kind of going our way, but it's high time we give these younger players a shout. And honestly, he may not have known that Nacho would perform so badly on the left flank, but if he saw that, why didn't he not switch David Alaba to left back and move Nacho to the center? You know, why did that not happen? I'm not a tactical analyst. I'm not going to try to be one right now. But to anyone watching, Real Madrid looked disorganized, disjointed, disconnected, discombobulated, and simply distant from ever having a chance against what is a Barcelona that is still in a rebuilding phase. And that's what irks me the most. They're still in a rebuilding phase. They're still trying to get used to this team that they have. And we let them off the hook simply because we had, besides having shit tactics, we also had a lack of attitude. Because Nacho himself is saying, oh, you know, maybe we were too relaxed because, you know, we're ahead in the scoreline. And then you have guys like Juanma Rodriguez from El Chiringuito and other Madridistas saying, it doesn't matter because we're so far ahead of them. And so you think that the way to disrespect Barcelona is by letting them win? I don't understand that thought process. That is a fucking loser mentality, man, for people to do that. When you have somebody, when you have your worst enemy, and not to say that they're enemies, but I'm saying when you have the team that you hate the most and it is your biggest rival, and I'll tell you, man, when it comes to football, when it comes to, you know, to the being on the pitch, I want Barcelona dead every single time we play them. I'll shake their hands after the game and tell them good game. I'll be friends with I have friends that are Barcelona fans. But when it comes to the game, I want them to be fucking destroyed every single time we play them. Not to give them a chance to win. So I don't understand the mentality where, okay, it doesn't matter. I understand saving players like Benzema and because you don't want them to get injured, because you don't want to play him, you know, and run the risk of not having him available against, you know, bigger fish to fry like Chelsea in the Champions League. But still, go out there with a structure and an attitude, with an idea to play the game and win it. Not experimentation with this strange setup that nobody knew what the hell it was about. Honestly, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it the team lacked attitude. It really seemed like they had no clue what was going on out on the pitch. There was absolutely zero structure or even intent. There was zero intent for what Real Madrid was trying to do. I didn't see anything that looked like an actual intentional play or an intentional, how would you say, like something that was worked on in the training ground. You didn't see anything like that. And instead in Barcelona, you saw a team that was worked. You saw them knowing what they wanted to do. You know, all those balls over the top from Piqué and Eddie Garcia that were going into wide open space, that was because they knew it was going to be there. And then honestly, for Thibaut Courtois to say during the break, Ancelotti tried to make some changes, but that the players didn't really understand them, showcases how bad Ancelotti's tactical setup was, even if there was one. I mean, I read an article from Kian Sobhani where he was talking about, you know, to call what we saw in that game tactics is actually, you know, being hugely generous. I don't remember a game, honestly, I don't remember a game where I saw Real Madrid play this bad. Maybe the game against PSG at the beginning of it, but in the first leg, but there were moments in there where I was like, okay, they're trying to do something, but still, I mean, and you're playing against PSG and you're playing against the likes of Mbappe and Messi and Neymar, you know, you're playing, and Verratti had an absolutely phenomenal game. You're playing against players that you know, you on paper, and it's the Champions League, you know, and we still kind of let that shit go, and we were playing away from home. But in our own house, against a team that hasn't even been playing that well, you know, yes, they've been winning their last few games, but a team that is still trying to go through a rebuilding phase, you know, a team that suffered, and this is the thing that's worse to me, is a team that suffered against Galatasaray, who's 12th in the Turkish Super League. They put on a better game against Barcelona than we did. To hear Xavi say the words that they expected that it was going to be more difficult tells you everything you need to know about how Real Madrid approached this. And you can't tell me that's only on the coach. Because even if it's a tactical shit show, you would see more attitude from the players wanting to do something. But they were like outclassed. They were outgunned. Sure. I mean, at the point is, if you have no strategy and no structure, then you're really going to wonder how the hell you're going to stop people. But there was no moment in this game where anybody kind of, you know, I missed a Sergio Ramos or somebody that would stand up and yell at the other players and be like, yo, what the hell is going on right now? But nobody was talking to each other on this pitch. And the only guy that we have that somewhat looks like a leader, at least in this game, and that actually, you know, and yeah, I mean, I give it to the defenders like Militao and David Alaba, but Alaba made a two mistakes, honestly, huge mistakes that led to goals in this game. You know, he was lazy on tracking Aubameyang, and then he was lazy on tracking back. They kind of just let him cut right through the middle there, Militao and Alaba. And then he was the one who gave the ball away for I think it was the third goal that they scored. The one where Aubameyang lets it off to Ferran Torres. He gave the ball away. So they made mistakes. The whole team made mistakes, but Thibaut Courtois saving our ass, and it shouldn't have to be where that guy is constantly having to get tested. We should be better than that. I mean, this is a team. You're talking about a team that has struggled. I mean, Barcelona, you're talking about a team that struggled again. Like, once again, they struggled against Galatasaray. They had a rough time against a Napoli that was phenomenal at the beginning of the season, struggled in the middle of the season. Now they're kind of back on track, but in a Serie A that hasn't really been doing that well this season at all. Ancelotti admitted after the game that he made mistakes with his approach. And then he says that he rarely makes the same mistake twice. And that's something that we'll have to see. Because honestly, we talk about the false nine, him using a false nine setup. And he did the same thing again when we lost against Athletic Bilbao in the Copa del Rey. But honestly, I've been watching things like my friend Jota Real Madrid. I watch a lot of Iñaki Angulo, who does his show on YouTube as well in Spanish, which is a fantastic show. And he was also on BN Sports. And, you know, honestly, he calls Ancelotti a mediocre coach. Not that Ancelotti he's a mediocre coach now. He's calling him a mediocre coach now. Not that he was one. But honestly, I don't think this guy, and I think a lot of people have said it, Mudahasir, Jurno, you know, who sometimes I think can be a real, sometimes he could be a little bit annoying, you know, but he's passionate. He wants the team to change, and I think we all want to see them win consistently. And then at least, I mean, even if you drop points, dropping points is going to be only a natural thing. But at least if you drop points, let it be a fluke here and there, but not something that you get just absolutely schooled by your biggest rival. And it's just been like everyone's been saying, like, it's kind of been a long time coming, you know, like these kind of things we've been seeing. We've been getting like little glimpses of this lack of tactics and the fact that Real Madrid doesn't seem to wake up, or Ancelotti doesn't seem to wake up and re-inspire the team until after there's a halftime talk and we might be 1-0 down. That's when they, you know, this team doesn't seem to be content, or Ancelotti doesn't seem to be content unless they have their backs against the wall. And it's weird because I feel like we did the same thing with Zidane, but I don't know. Zidane, at least there was some tactical acumen there. This doesn't seem like there is one. And I love, and the thing is, it bothers me because I liked Ancelotti so much, and I do still like the guy. But is he the guy to carry this whole thing forward, you know, for us to rely on a long-term project for Madrid? And then even if you let go of even if you let go of Ancelotti, who are you going to get as a coach? Because I think what happens is a lot of people on Twitter, and I'm seeing like a lot of people on Twitter post this, is they talk about, you know, all these tactical coaches and bringing in all these people and, you know, and talking about different coaches they want to bring, whether it's, you know, Ten Hag or Nagelsmann or Klopp or whatever, you know. And then it's like, you guys forget who runs the show at Madrid. Yes, I know we have a board and I know we have socios and I know we have all this stuff, but at the end of the day, Florentino Perez runs the show, and that guy wants a yes man and the board wants a yes man. They're not going to come in. You're not going to get a Conte who's going to do whatever the hell he wants, you know, and come to Madrid and mouth off to Perez without him suffering some sort of, you know, repercussions for it. He'll get fucking canned. He'll find a way, you know. As much as you guys like it, I dislike it or dislike it, you gotta have, you know, it's got, you gotta meet the guy halfway. Florentino Perez wants a yes man. He wants to run this team as a business. He is more ready to sign up Galactico players than he is to sign a Galactico coach. Because coaches don't sell shirts. Marketing money doesn't come from having a good, a good tactical coach. And I know so many people are talking about bringing in these tactical guys and all this stuff and not being caught up with these dinosaurs and, you know, you people calling them dinosaurs. I think, you know, some label Ancelotti as a dinosaur, Mourinho, you know, these guys that are apparently finished coaches, all this fucking, that this Twitter jargon, which I find absolutely ridiculous. But maybe it's because I'm 39 and I don't really care about that shit. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, that's the guy who runs the show, man. He runs the show, and he's gonna. And if that tactical coach doesn't kowtow to Perez's demands, then I don't know if you're gonna get him. He's more than willing to get Galactico players, though. And at the same time, sometimes, unfortunately, guys, those Galactico players will just like we've seen with PSG. Those guys, like a guy like Mbappe, and if we bring Haaland and we bring Tchouaméni, and they come to Real Madrid, those guys will somewhat paper over the cracks of what is a somewhat shoddy system, like Ancelotti's or whatever, you know. And the funny thing is, will Mbappe, Haaland, and Tchouaméni, they can come, they might come to Madrid, but will they excel under Ancelotti? I mean, Tchouaméni is a fantastic talent, but are we gonna see Ancelotti bench Casemiro? I mean, the only reason we benched Casemiro in the PSG game was essentially because he couldn't play. It's one of those things that is a blessing in disguise, because if he would have not been suspended for that game, I'm wondering if we wouldn't have played, you know, Kroos, Casemiro, and Luka Modric. And maybe things would have gone a totally different way. And as Iñaki Angulo said, he was really like, did he really play an incredible, did Ancelotti really have a good game? Because he made the change for Camavinga, for Kroos, which was kind of a no-brainer at that point, because Kroos is still, and I think Kroos is still coming off an injury. I still don't think he's back to his 100%. And then the other thing is you have, you brought in Rodrigo for an Asensio. I mean, that was really, honestly, the least he could do. But you got to remember, there were two, and this is something Iñaki pointed out that I agree with, is you got to admit that there were two goals that got called off for offside. If Mbappe timed his runs a little bit better, we would have been 3-0 down, which would have ended the game 4-3 on aggregate, even if Benzema had his stellar hat trick. You know, so that's we. You know, and one of the things is I think I've gotten caught up in it before. I allowed good results to sometimes cloud my judgment about Ancelotti. I don't know. Listen, I mean, I think, like I said, it's high time to start giving these guys, if Ancelotti's really serious about not making the same mistakes twice, he's got to look at other things. And Perez has got to, you know, let's say you want to keep the guy around, at least until the end of the season, because I agree with that. Keep him until the end of the season, because changing things now, I think, is going to cause a lot more problems. Especially when you're 9 games away from winning La Liga and you are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. You're not going to change things overnight with this team. You know, as much as Xavi did with Barcelona, he still wasn't able to save them from getting thrown into Europa League and losing the Copa del Rey. So we change guys now, and we might as well just kiss the Champions League goodbye. At least that's my opinion. You got to wait until the season's over. Let this guy finish his thing. And if there's no, you know, and give him the chance. I mean, Florentino, at least I hope, sits him down and says, listen, man, you got to start playing some of these young guys. I mean, you got to give guys like Gutierrez and Antonio Blanco a chance. You need to start rotating out. You know, I wrote about it here. Casemiro, Kroos, and Modric, they're phenomenal players. But we have to begin getting ready for an era without them. And they're no longer the same guys. We're desperately holding on to an era when they were easily one of the greatest midfield trios in history. And those times, while they were absolutely great, are gone. They're fading. We have to give more chances to guys like, you know, Valverde, who just never stops in his all heart, to Camavinga, who I've seen is just an elegant player who's full of energy and attitude. And yeah, he might need to, be a little weary of how he goes into tackles, especially in La Liga. But the guy, I like the way he plays. And we got him for a reason. And honestly, I feel like Courtois has become the leader for this side. When it comes to captaincy and as they say in Spanish, dando la cara, you know, he will stick his neck out there and he'll be the one to make statements. He'll be the one to walk around the stadium after a loss and say sorry to the entire crowd on behalf of the rest of the team, because the rest of the team just walks off the pitch. You know, other players, of course, stayed back, which was, I believe it was, who else stayed back? It was David Alaba and Militao as well. And that's why we're liking what they're doing with the team. And we're liking how they're, you know, really feeling the Madridismo and apologizing and saying, you know, we didn't do well. We didn't perform. We got to fix this. And I think Courtois has really stepped up in that sense. And besides the fact, he's saving our ass time and time again in the back. But what happens when that fails? What happens when Courtois has a bad game, guys? You can't just leave this guy to save us every game, because you shoot at him 30 times. The guy's, you know, he's got to let some in, guys. That's not his job, is to stop 30 shots. I mean, it technically is, but it's just not. It's statistically, you're putting him at a disadvantage. And honestly, the right back situation, it can't go on any longer. Carvajal, he's a shell of a former self. I hate to say it, but he is. Lucas Vázquez is, he's injury prone. Sorry, Carvajal is injury prone. It's been happening time and time again. He looked absolutely terrible trying to catch up to Ferran Torres. And the funny thing is, it's Ferran Torres. It's not Mbappé. You can kind of excuse it when it's Mbappé. It was one of the best players in the world at the moment. But to lose out to Ferran Torres was just weird. From a guy who used to be one of the best right backs in Europe. And now our only help right now is really, honestly, to start, and this has been here, you know, people have been saying it all over Twitter, is to start bringing in Lucas Vázquez to start over Carvajal, because you really is the only thing that you have. But that is a short-term solution. And then I'm hearing and I'm seeing things on Twitter where Madrid is even counting on a right back. You're just waiting to have Lucas Vázquez, Carvajal, and Odriozola in that position. I don't know. Listen, guys, I admittedly allowed, like I said, I admittedly allowed good results to cloud my judgment about Ancelotti. And honestly, I hear a lot about getting coaches that are tacticians and not simply man managers, but you need both. And I still find myself trusting Ancelotti if he simply gets over this stubbornness that he has. If, you know, somebody wakes him up, but that's a problem. I mean, that's a problem. He's a 62-year-old man. He's set in his ways. He's not going to have an epiphany overnight and be like, you know what? I should play Miguel Gutierrez, and I should play Camavinga and Valverde, and maybe I should give Jovic a shout, and maybe I should, you know, that's not easy to do. But I think what it is that the coach in me, and this is something that I wrote, is that the coach in me feels it's always unfair to blame the coach, to blame only the coach. Because honestly, they can, you know, coaches can fix some things, but not all things. Look, and I'm bringing this from a totally left field because I know I always bring my like fighting stuff into it because I absolutely loved coaching fighters. I still love the fight game. It's one of the things that makes me passionate. It's one of the things that makes me competitive. And it's one of the things that I use to analyze football because at the end of the day, when you manage fighters and you manage students, you're managing people. And it's the same as managing players. And there's obviously there's a huge difference, but in some of the aspects, but you're managing people and you're trying to get the best performance out of them, whether they're fighting for a title or they just want to be a better version of themselves. That's what you're doing as a coach, as an instructor, whatever. And I always remember coworkers of mine, other coaches, discussing how when you're a coach, you had to simultaneously play the role of a psychologist, a friend, a confidant, a financial advisor, a motivational speaker, a relationship advisor, etc. These guys, honestly, when you're a coach, your whatever it is, your players, your fighters, your students, whatever, they come to you for advice. It's funny, they always come to you for advice, no matter if they have a family and if they have other people to talk to. You know, you're sitting down after a hard training session and they sit down with you and they tell you and they unleash all sorts of things that they might be going on in their lives. They totally do it all the time. And you sit there and as a coach, you sit there and try to understand what it is that's going through with them and try to motivate them. And that was what I tried to do. I tried to motivate my fighters. I tried to motivate my students and get them going and doing, having the best lives. I mean, whether they were going to do it in the fight game or they were going to do it in their regular lives, that's what I did. I tried to coach them. And like, honestly, when they won a fight, I felt like I was winning it with them. And when they lost the fight, I felt like I was losing it with them. And that's what coaches are essentially. That, you know, you can't just dismiss how involved these coaches are and that they're, but you can't lay all the blame on them because honestly, this is like when I'm talking about us being the, you know, when a coach is being, involved so much in a fighter or student's lives, you got to remember at the end of the day, in that case, like I remember the coach, the fighter, the student is paying me for the services. So I can't imagine how it's going to be when they're world-class players that have massive salaries and oftentimes even bigger egos. That's got to be tough as hell. And at the end of the day, guys, coaches aren't miracle workers. Oftentimes they're only good. They honestly, sometimes good coaches are only good until other coaches figure out how to beat them. You know, we've seen that time and time again. I mean, Pep Guardiola hasn't won a Champions League. As good as he is, hasn't won a Champions League since he left Barcelona. And it's because I think sometimes people catch him. People understand what he's going to do. And then he even, you know, because your tactics have to be ever evolving. Ancelotti seems, and I think Mourinho también, can also be in there too. Ancelotti and some other coaches seem to have gotten stuck in the past a bit with no desire or understanding how to evolve. But some other coaches evolve and it doesn't work. Guardiola has had games where he's overthought the situation and ends up losing. Anyway, like I said, I don't agree with getting rid of Ancelotti now, even though he, you know, he might not be evolving or it's taking him time to evolve or get used to this Madrid and push them in the correct direction, especially them being a side that is getting older and bringing in new guys and integrating those new guys in the squad. But like I said, getting rid of him now when the team is 9 games away from winning the league and is in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, I think it's more harm. You're going to cause more damage to the team. It's going to do more harm than good. So at the end of the day, guys, I think Real Madrid can turn this situation around. This is Real Madrid. They do it time and again. But my God, what I wouldn't do for some consistency, some semblance of a structure and good football where we aren't worried about whether or not we're going to be heartbroken at the end of the game or you're close to having a heart attack each game because we're always playing on the edge of losing. Things need to change. I mean, that's the thing that happened. This is ridiculous. I mean, as much as people are going to say, oh, well, we're still winning La Liga. We're still going to win La Liga. We're still in a position to win La Liga. And we're in the quarterfinals. Well, what happens when the quarterfinal? Let's say, you know, what happens if the ball drops and we don't win the Champions League? You know, we get kicked out of the Champions League. We might beat Chelsea. What happens if we beat, you know, we have to face a Man City or a Bayern? What happens to those things? Forgot how the lineup, I mean, the brackets are, but I don't know, guys. If we face a really tough team, it's going to be tough. Because you got to, you know, you're 100%, I'm 100% sure these guys are looking, these coaches are looking. And as somebody said, Tomas Tuchel is probably licking his lips right now, watching the highlights from the Barcelona game and seeing how easily it was for them to just stroll across our midfield and destroy us. But the funny thing is, I think sometimes people don't get is that, you know, even Mbappe himself said it, you know, sometimes you don't understand how Real Madrid looks like absolute garbage one day and then they go into the Champions League and they defeat the teams that everybody thought was going to win the thing. But at the end of the day, man, I'm so mad because at the same time I said, once again, I hate Barcelona, man. I hate them with a passion. And that's the one team you don't go in there just half-assing it. You don't want to lose against them. They're our biggest rival in La Liga. They're our biggest rival emotionally through historically. You don't just hand them a win. It bothers me to go in with attitudes like that. I never feel good. I don't know, man. It's just when I go back to things, I don't think, does anybody ever really go out there thinking, you know, let's go out and lose the game? Or let's go out because, you know, let's go out and play, but it's okay to lose the game. What kind of mentality is that? That's not a Real Madrid mentality for people to be saying that it's okay to lose this game, that even if we lose, it's okay because we're still 15 points. Who thinks like that, man? I don't know. I don't think that way. And I don't think the team should be thinking that way. Not a team of professional players. It's ridiculous. Look, some players need to go and they're going to go, you know. We know which ones are leaving at the end of the season. But other players should be getting the minutes they deserve and the chance to shine because we have some there that aren't getting the chances that they deserve. You know, we can't field players simply because of what they have done for us in the past. We need to play the ones that can make a difference right now. It's a difficult choice to make as a coach, I think, but it's something that needs to happen. And I think the problem is it's a difficult choice to make. And I think what happens is we are a little bit, not a little bit, I think this team is a little bit, and some of us Madridistas are a little bit too emotionally caught up with some players. I can do it. I myself am like that with Modric. But you know what? At the end of the day, I want to win. I don't get attached to players that much. I love Modric to death, but if he needs to sit down and let Valverde in or Camavinga in so that we can win a game, so be it. Why can't more players be like Benzema who says, you know what, when I start becoming a liability, you know, I'm going to step aside. I think it's hard to do for some of these players, man. But you end up becoming a villain when you just sit there and you refuse to not realize that your better days are behind you. You know, and I don't think that Modric's better days are behind him. I mean, well, I think, you know, obviously he's going up there in age, but the guy is still phenomenal. As is Kroos. I feel like Casemiro has been up and down. I might, you know, get called out on that, but I feel like he hasn't been as consistent as he used to be. But you got to be real with that. Who's ever deputized Casemiro? The guy just plays minutes and minutes and minutes every single season. And he's 30 years old, but he's got, I don't know, how many thousands of minutes in those legs because he's never taken off the pitch. He never gets a break. I'm pretty sure he's been wasted away more than a lot of players because we've never had somebody to back him up. And it's like we don't even want to find somebody. Or when we do have a chance, like with Blanco or with Camavinga, even if we have to play a double pivot instead, well, then, you know, to make up for a Casemiro, then at least try it. But don't try it and start experimenting, you know, those kind of things in a game against your biggest rival. Don't start, you know, pulling rabbits out of a hat and putting Modric as a number nine in the game that you want to beat again. You know, you want to play against your biggest rivals. It's just crazy to me, man. I don't understand where these thoughts come from. And so I'm in a battle. I'm honestly in a battle with myself because as much as I love Ancelotti, I just can't forgive him for this loss. And I see it very difficult, guys, very difficult. If we're being real, I see it very difficult for us to win the Champions League. And so without the Champions League and just La Liga, are we really going to look back on this and say Ancelotti really did something great with this team? I don't know if we will. And that's what's going to end up costing him. Because at the end of the day, if you won La Liga, but you looked kind of crappy doing it, and you lost some really big games, and the fan base isn't convinced with you, I think that's going to mean that it's time to go. So as much as I love the guy, I think it's edging more and more towards it's time to go and just get us through this season, Carlo, and then, man, you got to step aside. And Florentino, you got to do something, you know? You got to bring in other players. You got to bring it right back. And you got to look for somebody that's going to take us. And, man, I don't care, man. You know, I don't mind, guys. I mean, some of you guys want tacticians and all this kind of stuff. But I don't care if it's, you know, if bring in Xabi, bring in Raul. I mean, Xabi Alonso and bring in Raul. I don't know. Do it. If it's going to be a better situation than this, if they're going to bring in fresh ideas, then that might be a help in the end. I mean, you look at Barcelona, guys. I mean, Xavi was somebody that nobody really thought that he was going to do well. And you know what? Here's one thing that I'll say about this before I go. Nobody thought Xavi was going to be the success that he's been. But the problem is he's on a streak. He's on a streak of 11, you know, what is it, 11, 12 wins in a row. We all know that streaks don't last. And what's going to happen when he starts going through a tough, rough patch? What's going to happen when he starts losing games? Are they going to stick with him? Because it happened at the beginning of the season. That's fine. But if this continues on, you know, if he has up and down games and things like that, and that team doesn't recover, because we know that they're not going to be able to get all these amazing players that they, at least not in the next season, you know, what's going to happen? Are they going to stick with him? Things go up and down. There's ebbs and flows. So let them celebrate right now. Let them celebrate this win. We'll get it back. We'll get it back. And I hope the next time we take it more seriously and Madridistas take it more seriously and say, you know what? No. We want it. It doesn't matter if Barcelona's down in the dumps and they're 17th place in La Liga. We have to absolutely finish them. Because that's when you do with your biggest rivals. Is even when they are down and out, you finish them. You finish them, you finish them, you finish them. So that they always remember who the king of Europe is. And that's all I got to say, ladies and gentlemen. That is all I have to say on this podcast of my rant after El Clásico. That's all I got to say, man. I mean, thank you for listening, guys, to the Nada Más podcast. My name is Eric Rivera. I am the host of this podcast, but I am also assisted by a couple of great people that have, you know, been helping me out here as well. And then in addition, I wanted to welcome, of course, Hilaluddin, who helped me, is helping us out on the podcast as well, that you guys heard him on the last edition, the last episode. Also, Trombach is doing great things with us, helping out a lot behind the scenes. Really appreciate him. And then, you know, hey guys, if you're interested in becoming a part of the podcast, not always on air, but if you're being, you know, interested in writing for us, if you're interested in helping us out here and there, whether, I don't know, we can figure things out on social and different things. We could always need help. If you want to design for us, stuff like that as well, hey guys, hit us up. Hit us up at info@inadamas.net. Also, check out the website, inadamas.net, for all our articles for our podcast, if you don't download it from any other spot. Check us out on YouTube, of course. If you want to see the video version of this podcast, you can check it out on YouTube, unless, of course, you're watching that right now. Subscribe, guys. Hit the notification button. Help us get up there in subscribers so we can get that vanity URL. We're still rising up, and we're getting a lot of people joining the Nada Más train. So thank you very much for that. And then, guys, if you are listening to the podcast, of course, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you find your favorite podcast. But if you are on Apple Podcasts, as always, I respectfully ask you guys to please, please, please leave a comment, leave a rating. And, you know, I've received some great comments from you guys. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the support. You know, my goal is only to grow. Our goal is only to continue growing with everybody here at the podcast. So thank you very much. And listen, guys, I know we're all down and out right now, but it's a la Madrid, a la Madrid, a la Madrid, more now than ever. But just don't ever be complacent. That's the one thing that we have to remember. This is a team that's never complacent. So why are we complacent against our biggest rivals? No, that's what happened. That's why we got scored on. No, we're never complacent, you know? But we also never turn our back on this team. So a la Madrid, we'll come back. And thank you very much for listening.
This has been Y Nada Más, Al Real Madrid Podcast.